Hello everyone, this is Mathieu Rey speaking, the CCNSO appointed co-chair. Welcome to this CCWG accountability meeting number 71. And you may wish to know that accountability meeting number one was held on December the 9th, 2014. So tomorrow is going to be the anniversary of our group. And we've made quite a significant and amazing progress since then. So that's, I think it's been a very interesting year for all of us, I hope. And I'm glad that you managed to make it for this 71st call today. I've already heard a number of participants to the call informed that they were on audio only. I heard about Rolof Meyer. I heard Kavus Araste and Rosemary Fay. Are there any other participants to the call who are on audio only and should be added to the roll call?
Jordan Kuiper is at the moment. Dylan Zed.
Keith Drazek. Thank you.
Matthew, just I want to inform you that I am not in a good situation. I am calling you from hospital, being operated. But since I'm very much devoted to CCWG, I decided to attend this call to listen to the same practice of it. I have been operated today. Thank you.
Wow, Karus, that's I hope you're recovering well and that it's nothing too serious. I think the and that's quite a proof of dedication that you're attending the call, and I hope you're not jeopardizing your well-needed rest for that purpose, because health comes first, and I hope you I think the whole group joins me in wishing you speedy and full recovery from your operation. I should also ask whether there are any updates on statements of interest. And if not, then I will note for further reference that Alan mentioned in the chat, Alan Greenberg, that he would have an AOB when we come to this agenda item. So that's well noted, Alan. I would now turn to the agenda for this call, which is very much a call in between during the public comment period that has started. And I am turning now to Leon for agenda item number two. Leon?
Thank you very much, Mathieu. This is Leon Sanchez. Can you hear me well?
Yes, Leon.
Thanks. So, as you know, we held two webinars to inform the larger community on our third draft proposal. And on webinar one, which we had a very good attendance, we have 72 attendees to this first webinar. We have 10 members, 29 participants, 4 observers, and 29 guests, which is, I think, quite a good number of fresh faces, new faces in these webinars. And I think that the outreach work that everyone has been doing has so far proved useful in attracting these new faces. The second webinar was attended by 69 persons, from which 12 were members, 26 were participants, 4 observers, and 27 were guests or new faces. So in total, we had over 50 new faces in both webinars and an attendance of over 130 people, almost 140 people over 140 people attending both webinars. And as you know, we are trying to encourage every charity organization to hold their own calls in order to go through the third proposal. And we are encouraging everyone to continue this reach out exercise. So I hear that the audio is dropping. Is that right?
Mine is good, okay, well, at least.
Ian. Fine for me.
Okay. Okay. Good. So, well, these were the two webinars. As you know, also as part of the effort of documenting the webinars, we tasked the staff to build a document that concentrates all the questions and answers that were raised throughout the two webinars. And this document is ready and will be published later today, so we can all have access to the differences that were raised during these two webinars, and of course, corresponding answers to each of the questions. So this will be ready today, and as soon as it gets published, we'll do, of course, the proper announcement in the list, and we'll forward the link to the resource so that everyone has it handy and can go back and take a look at this document. Another activity that we carried out as coaches, as you know, we informed the group that we were invited by the board to hold an information call with them. They were gathering, they were meeting for some board work at some point, and they included an agenda item in their meeting to host the coaches of the CCWG and have an informational talk about the third proposal. So this call was only a 30-minute call. The corresponding part of the call was transcribed for transparency purposes, and it will be published, of course. I'm not sure if it's already been published, but if it's not, it will be published, and it will be public, of course, to abide to the transparency, the standards that we have been carrying out throughout the work of the CCWG. So, as I said, this was a short call with the board. It was a call in which they reminded us of the first comment that they sent to the list with some concerns. Of course, as you may have seen on a couple of issues in our third draft proposal, and we agreed that they would be going deeper into details in these comments, as these first comments that they sent to the list were only initial comments. They would be further fleshing out the comments that they wanted to do to our third draft proposal. And for these, we were invited to have another call, which might take place on Sunday, next Sunday, December the 13th. And in there, I think that, of course, the objective would be to have a session of questions and answers from the board to the coaches so that we can clarify and guide the board on their comments in regard to our third proposal. And we also stressed that any comments coming from the board would need to be very precise and, of course, abiding to the timeline that has been set per our work. So we are trying to have very clear questions from the board in their concerns so we can, of course, provide very clear answers to them. And we also ask them for clarity on whether they're supported or whether they didn't support the proposals in our third draft proposal. So what we ask from the board is a simple yes, we support, or no, we don't support. We encourage them not to come back to us with just buts. So that is how the calls with the board went. And as I said, we will be holding another call with them that might take place on Sunday. And I say might take place because we are we are still in the process of actually deciding whether this is going to happen on Sunday. So that's, I think, what I have to report on item two. And, of course, questions are welcome. And I will go back to Thomas for the next agenda item if there are no questions on this issue.
Yes, I have a question. Caboose,
yes,
I have a question. I'm very sorry. You remember that I sent a message, a warning message to the ICANN board that we have been listening to them very, very carefully, and we have considered all their concerns. I hoped that this call would have been some clarification issue, but not something which in English concerns means some sort of negative connotations. I don't understand what is the concern. Was it on a specific issue that we could easily resolve, or was it a general saying that we have concerns? In the latter case, unfortunately, it doesn't work. It created difficulties once again if they say we have concerns. So you kindly are requested to tell them that they must specifically mention which parts or area or recommendation or part of recommendation they have concern, and they need to kindly propose a concrete suggestions. Having concern is not sufficient. We need to raise concern, if any, but at the same time propose the proposals or suggestions or corrections. And number two, I hope this call on Sunday would not give rise to another call, so we should not have a Pandora box. So Sunday would be almost the last clarification. It is understood that ICANN has all rights to comment on anything. We, CCWG, do not have any mandate to prevent them. However, we have worked together in this anniversary of the CCW 1 year very closely. So please make them kindly understood that we need to have some end up to all of these back and forth and so on and so forth. Sorry, my voice was weak. If you have not heard that, I apologize for that. You may resume yourself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. And I think that since you are not in the Adobe Connect room, I would like to convey that everyone, or many people at least, in the Adobe Connect room are wishing you a quick recovery and, of course, are acknowledging your commitment to the CCWG work. And we do appreciate that, notwithstanding your recent operation, you are with us here in this call. And in regard to your comment, yes, I would say that rather than concerns, I think that what the board has raised are more points that from their point of view need clarification. So that's what we are trying to clarify the points that the board is doubtful about in our proposal. And we have been very specific that, as you said, we can't continue to go back and forth. This is not a negotiation. This is, of course, the input that we will be receiving from them, but it's only input as any other input from the rest of the community. And this input that they provide us should be very, very clear. As I said previously, it would be ideal to have this feedback in a form of a binary answer of yes or no, we support or we don't support. And what would not be very constructive would be to have answers on the like of yes, but we suggest this other way of other way forward. So this call, as you said on Sunday, would not likely lead to another call with the board. So we hopefully we'll have the last call with the board on Sunday. And I see Robin's hand is up. Robin?
Thanks very much, Leanne. Maybe I missed this, but could you tell us perhaps an overview briefly what were the points that the board raised? What were the issues that they were concerned about or that perhaps require more clarification or for which there's doubt? Can you give us any sense for what they said?
Yes, Robin. The board sent through Bruce Tonkin an email to the list, as far as I can recall. I'm trying to look for that email as we speak, in which they signaled to some points that they thought that were... that were in need of clarification from the CCWG. But I do remember that there was a point on human rights. There was a point on inspection rights. And there was also a point on board consideration of CAC advice. So that there was also a point on the mission. And let me see if I can find the email as we speak. No, I don't have it handy, but I do remember those four points that I just told you. And what we did in the call with the board, as I said, since it was a very short time that we had allocated, it was a 30-minute call. We didn't really went into detail, so I think that in our call on Sunday, we will be actually going into details as we requested the board to have very precise and very clear questions on these points so that we could answer to them and clarify them. But the issues would be these four: human rights, inspection rights, board consideration of CAC advice, and ICANN's mission. I hope that is helpful, Robin. So are there any other questions in this? Excellent, thanks. So are there any other questions at this point on agenda item number 2? Okay, so as there are no more questions, I will now turn to my co-chair, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. Sorry, Leon. Hello, everyone, and a special greeting to Kavu. We are now going to very briefly discuss the IRP subgroup, as it's called, on the agenda. As you know, this is meant to be an implementation oversight team, but certainly that is a little bit short of what will surely be the reality. So this group will not just oversee what's going to be implemented and draft by our lawyers, but I'm sure that they will also have some substantive discussions on how the processes for the IRP shall be designed, how the paperwork shall be phrased. And this is the reason why we have an agreement with you, asked for volunteers to join the implementation oversight team that do have the required expertise to contribute with their expertise to this process. So in the on the screen in front of you, you see the list of those that have expressed an interest to join this team. So we have Becky, who also volunteered to take the lead on this initiative, which we thank her for very much. We have Krista Spain, David McAuley, David Post, Greg Shatton, Malcolm Huddy, Robin Gross, Tijani Benjima, Arun Mohan Sakumar, Marianne Gauvelin, Avri Doria, and I think one name is missing, and that is Sam Eisner, who has indicated an interest to participate on behalf of ICANN Legal. You might remember that ICANN Legal will also contribute to this process because ultimately they are going to be affected by this and need to work with this legal tool as well. So it's great to see that we got this level of commitment. There have been some questions surrounding the process, and you might remember that we introduced the idea of the implementation oversight team, including selection criteria, based on the notion that we would ask for expressions of interest, and only in case we're getting too many responses within a deadline that we set at the time to have a definitive date by which we can get things started, only if we're getting too many individuals expressing their interest so that we have too big of a group so that it can effectively work, we would then further work with you on additional selection criteria. So with respect to this group that we see in front of us, we do not see an issue with the number because, as you know, Sam will be more or less the ICANN Legal liaison. Chris is a board member as well, so he will likely also liaise with the board on this topic. So the group is of manageable size, but nonetheless, while we are thinking that the number of interested individuals is sufficiently small to keep the group operational, we still want to ensure that the individuals do have the required expertise in order not only to observe what the group is actually debating, because observing is something that all of us can do. I'm sure that this group will also meet the transparency standards that we expect. But we would want them to actively be able to contribute. And therefore, we would like to ask those who have not sent an expression of interest specifying their expertise in the field to do so that ultimately we can confirm participation of the individuals for this group. Another point, next to the expertise that is required to make this group functional, is diversity. You will remember that we have sent the list of attendees or of interested parties to the group while also indicating where they are coming from, and we would like to encourage participation from all geographic regions as long as the individuals volunteering to contribute to this exercise do have the required expertise. So we would suggest to you, and again, this is nothing that we as co-chairs would just impose on you, but we're suggesting to keep the number of individuals or regard the number of individuals that have volunteered not being too high, that we're testing whether, you know, we're not going to have an audit or something of that kind, but let's see whether the individuals actually can speak to their expertise in the field. And in the affirmative, we would start with that group, and we would keep the group open in case that we have additional contributors to provide for more geographic diversity and allow for them to contribute and join the team, and only in case we're getting too many expressions of interest, we would get back to this whole group and discuss whether we need to readjust because the group just becomes too big in order to be fully operational. I see Tijani's hand is up. Tijani, please. Tijani, you can't be heard.
Sorry, I was muted. I would like to say that no one from LAC region is there. I think that we need, yes, you said we will not force people, but we can perhaps, how to say, mention to people, from this region, that their region is not represented at all in this group, so that we will have at least one from this region. As you see, I volunteered only because there was no one from Africa. And I don't hope that we will have no one from LAC region. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tijani. And rest assured that we share the concern and that we share the hope that we will have more diversity. Maybe we can all think about ways to get interested parties to the table. If you, as well as any other attendee of this call or your peers, have ideas as to whom we could direct or what channels we could use for outreach purposes, I'm sure that we will gladly pick that up. So thank you so much for this. Do we have any further contributions to this or questions?
Thomas, is it possible that you include me in the list?
Can you please repeat that for me? So there was some background noise.
Yeah, I want to be included in the list, please.
Kabut, you don't have to do this today or tomorrow, but it would be great to get an expression of interest from you if you want to be included in the list of attendees for this implementation oversight team. And if your intention was to be added to the list of speakers, it is actually your turn. So please do speak.
Now, I would like, I don't know what is the meaning of the speaker and oversight team. Is it explained somewhere? I don't take your time. I read you that, or can you explain it very quickly in a minute?
Yes, it can easily be explained. As you know, we've been working on recommendations to enhance the independent review process. And there is language needed to be drafted in order to operationalize the IRP. So the rules to that process need to be determined. The selection criteria for the panelists and according procedures need to be drafted. The standards of review need to be drafted. And for all of that, we're going to deploy our lawyers who are experienced in the field, but in order to ensure that the lawyers are drafting the paperwork in the spirit of the CCWG recommendations, we plan to set up an implementation oversight team, which is recruited from the community to work with the lawyers to ensure that that our recommendations are abided by in the paperwork. So thank you very much for that clarifying question. Kabus, do we have any further questions from the group? Ellen Greenberg and then Tijani, please.
Thank you. It's not a question on the implementation team as such, but on what their mandate is. One of the ALAC comments on the IRP was that the IRP is charged with addressing inconsistent panel reports, but the outcomes that are listed, the only outcome from an IRP is to decide whether ICANN's bylaws have been followed. So I don't see how it can handle inconsistent panel requests without an outcome that matches it. It's been suggested that it's an implementation issue, but since our prescription that the only outcome is a ruling on following bylaws, I don't see how that can be done. So if it's an implementation issue and everyone agrees, I can live with it, but I would like to understand how they're going to alter the rules, essentially, to allow that to be an implementation rule.
Thanks very much, Alan. I could attempt an answer to that, but since we have Becky on the call, if I'm not mistaken, let's ask Becky whether she wants to volunteer and answer that.
Hey there. So I think that we got some interesting input on the whole issue of the use of IRPs to resolve inconsistencies among expert panels. And I think that the answer has to be that if a policy was developed that depended on, that used and deployed these independent review councils, the policy itself would have to specify the manner in which the IRP would resolve any inconsistencies if the policy wanted to use the IRP for that purpose, and also specify the outcomes that would be handled. So I think that the notion would be that if as the outcome of a policy development process, there was a desire to use the independent review panel to resolve inconsistencies, that would be developed as part of the process, the policy process itself.
Thanks very much, Becky. And as you will have noted, this question, including its answer, is pretty much on substance of the actual work that both the lawyers will have to conduct in drafting the paperwork, as well as for the implementation oversight team to take a look at. So I would suggest that as we move on with the speakers list, that we focus, during this call at least, on the procedural aspect of setting up the implementation oversight team. Tijani, your hand is raised, so please fire away.
Yes, thank you very much, Thomas. I think that the fact that you mentioned that people on this group or on this team should have expertise, make people from some region not volunteer because they perhaps think that they have to be set on a review team before, or perhaps they have to be lawyers to know to have a legal expertise. So this is, I think, this is the misunderstanding. We are not there to the expert. I think that most of the CCWG members have the necessary expertise because the role of this team is to see if the language developed by the lawyers will be in the spirit of the group developed, and exactly they will give the result that the group wanted it to be. So I don't think that we have to explain people that expertise is not having already been on a review panel or being a lawyer. Thank you.
Thomas? Thanks very much, Tijani. Thomas? Actually, that's a very good point. And Kavuta, I'll get back to you in a moment, but let me briefly respond to what Tijani has said. You are correct in both stating that there is no requirement or no condition for participation in the IoT to have been on an implementation oversight team. Actually, in ICANN's history, there haven't been too many of those, so we would limit the number of eligible candidates substantially if we made that a requirement, nor is it required to be a lawyer. I guess what's helpful, and this is the reason why we have suggested this to be a criterion, it would be helpful for the individuals on this group to have something to contribute to an independent review process, i.e. to alternative dispute resolution. And you don't need to be a lawyer or have legal background in order to be experienced in that field. And that's only one of the expertises that might be valuable for this exercise. So expectation is not to have folks that actually have written such documents or the like, but we just want to increase chances that the individuals on this team can contribute on substance. Kavuz, you wanted to speak, so please go ahead.
Yes, Thomas. My comment is between what you said and what Tijani says. It does not necessarily to be a lawyer as such, having admission to New York bar or any other, but it should have preferably a legal background, because the issue is very critical and very sensitive. At least in order to comment, one should understand the language used by lawyers. Therefore, legal background is some important issues. Thank you. And I want to be in the list. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. And we have asked the other interested parties to send in their expression of interest. Since you are not at your computer at the moment, I would like to ask staff to send a reminder to you to send an expression of interest in the coming days so that it doesn't get forgotten. But this is to ensure that we're treating all the interested parties equally, which I'm sure you will understand. Ellen, your hand is new, or is that an old hand?
No, that was a new one in response to Becky. Becky's answer, and I know this is not implementation of the thing, but let's come to closure on it. Becky's answer is fine, but again, the document needs to be clear that panel decisions are in the purview of the group, but the ground rules will have to be set by the policy, by the applicable policy. That's all. Otherwise, we have a major inconsistency, which is my concern. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ellen. And as you can see in the Adobe, we have a huge number of witnesses for your statement, and we also have ALAC comments on the record. So I think chances are good that your point doesn't get forgotten and will be addressed when it needs to be addressed. So thank you very much, all of you, for an interesting and fruitful discussion. We will keep you apprised of any further developments on this. And with that, I'd like to end this agenda item and hand it back over to Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Thomas. And the next agenda item is about the timeline, a topic we've discussed before. But since there has been some discussion in the list regarding timeline and especially the chartering organization's timeline consideration of our recommendations, we thought it would be appropriate to recap this discussion and make sure we have clarity about expectations. As you can see, for those of you in the AC room, as a reminder, the public comment period ends on December 21st, and we are asking chartering organizations to provide their feedback, their endorsement or lack of endorsement of the 12 recommendations in a consistent time frame. There is room in this timeline for adjusting through a supplemental draft report if need be, and we believe that it would be good, based on the inputs received so far on the list, to communicate that in a more formal manner to the different chartering organizations. And for that purpose, we have drafted an email that could be sent that we would like to discuss with you before sending to the chartering organization's leaders. Can we have the draft email on the screen, please? So the idea behind this is that obviously there is nothing in our charter that enables us to set a firm date for chartering organizations to respond to our request. However, we want to make sure everyone's aware of the how interlinked and interdependent we are from each other if the ASO and ACs do not coordinate their plannings around this feedback. So the idea of this quick letter, and I will not read everything, but probably only the key aspects. It's a reminder that we're inviting chartering organizations to indicate their endorsement of the proposed Workstream 1 enhancements, that we encourage stakeholders to channel their comments through their ASO and ACs, which is not in any way meant to prevent them to file them directly to the CCWG as well. We are also indicating that we will be assessing the level of support received as our charter says, and we provide the quote from the charter which says that following submission of the draft proposals, each of the chartering organizations shall, in accordance with their own rules and procedures, review and discuss the draft proposal and decide whether to adopt the recommendations contained in it. The chairs of the chartering organizations shall notify the co-chairs of the working group of the results of the deliberations, as soon as feasible. So this is why I'm saying this. We are not in a position to dictate any deadlines to the chartering organizations. However, it's important to remind them of the fact that we will have, as co-chairs and with you as a group, to assess the level of support received. So the draft says that we would ask that they submit a formal position in a timeline that is consistent with the closing date of the comment period. So that means that obviously if it's a couple of days more or something like this, it's still in a consistent timeline. And unless significant concerns are raised by chartering organizations, the current proposal could be the final proposal, we request to be alerted as soon as possible of any contentious issues so that this can be conveyed to the other chartering organizations and they are not put in a position where they would approve recommendations that are subject to change. And then we are also conveying once again the proposal to organize specific webinars if need be. So that's the idea behind this draft, which we would hope clarifies the process as requested on the list. We can share it. Maybe we can ask staff to circulate this draft on the full list right now, so that to respond to Stephen's request so that it can be read. For those of you who have screens that do not allow this to be read on screen.
I have a comment.
Cavus, please.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Matthew, there has been 60 messages exchanged for this issue. We need to take the most practical and pragmatic approach and not to go too much in theory. It would be more appropriate that first allow the public comments to send their comments. In the meantime, while public comment comes, there is no prevention or prohibition of any chartering organization or any individual in that organization to provide some, I would say, advanced comments. However, the formal comments in the sort of or in the form of approval or disapproval of any recommendation, which I hope would be in that sense, but not in a general answer yes or no, because yes and no doesn't help. It should be in each recommendation, I'm sure you put it that way. So I suggest reading many of these emails that you or your colleagues try to put it in that way, that during the common period, the chartering organizations collectively in their own procedures or individually could comment as an advance comment. However, the formal comment would be after receipt of the entire comment from the public, which would considerably help the chartering organizations, which may not have thoroughly followed the situations compared with the public comment which are very, very closely following the situations. Would that cause any difficulties to you? Still, we maintain 21st of or 22nd of January, but we do it in a more structural way and allowing the people to take this practical approach. Does it really cause any difficulty for some of the leader teams, which I think they sit on their situations? Perhaps they should listen more to general concerns or general issues raised. So my question is to yourself, could you go along the line with what I have suggested? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Camus. And indeed, we wanted to provide the opportunity to say actually two things, that we need some clear indication of the direction that the chartering organizations are taking in a time frame that's consistent with the public comment, that is not necessarily on a one-day basis. It can be a few more days. However, and the formal approval may come a little bit later if need be. That was the intent here, and probably it might need to be refined. So I think we're very close to what you're suggesting, and hoping that we can get indications from the chartering organizations, even if it's not a formal resolution at that point, but provisions for formal resolution need to be made in a time frame that is going to be consistent to the overall timeline, which says that we need to provide the input to the board around mid-January. I noted a question from Jorge about, I would quote this question, does non-adoption by a chartering organization imply explicit rejection, or does non-adoption also imply a possibility of simple non-adoption, no decision to adopt and also no decision to reject? That's a good question. It's there is a precedent for the CWG where one of the chartering organizations, I think, issued a non-objection statement. I think there's a precedent that it was considered that there was consensus among the chartering organizations anyway to proceed with the report. However, we need to be aware that the charter is not fully explicit on all of this. So certainly formal approval is way better than anything else, and we would certainly welcome that. And if there is a situation that is similar to the CWG, we can probably rely on the same kind of precedent. I hope that we'll find this type of consensus at least. But I apologize for not being able to provide a very clear and direct answer to your question, which actually is not taken care of in the charter, so we are in unchartered territories here. Next on the queue, I see Greg's hand up.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record, and to some extent this is a variation on Jorge's question. It seems to me that one likely possibility is that essentially what you'll get back from at least one, if not more, chartering organizations is kind of a grade of incomplete, which is not an abstention from adoption, which is not non-adoption, but rather is basically a work in progress, such as, you know, that may come back saying that, you know, we have the following concerns, which if resolved would allow us to adopt recommendation X. And that doesn't seem to be contemplated in the charter. It also doesn't seem to be contemplated really in the letter. And, you know, talks about a formal position. I'm not sure what a formal position is, if that's something that's signed, given a meaning. So I recognize, obviously, the ideal thing is to get, you know, a big thumbs up on every recommendation from every chartering organization. And not to mention, of course, that there are things outside of the report, things outside of the recommendations in the report, such as the entire section of stress tests is not a quote-unquote recommendation. So it seems to me that we need to at least contemplate the concept that we're going to get back is something more in the nature of a dialogue than a rejection or an adoption. So how do we do that?
I have an answer to that, Matt.
Well, Karus, and then if you have an answer, please proceed.
Yes. My answer is that there are four options for each recommendation. Yes, I agree with the recommendation. Two, I don't agree with the recommendation. Three, no comments. Four, I agree, provided that certain conditions are fulfilled. So these are the four options that we use elsewhere, not only in the ICANN process, but elsewhere. Always we have something saying that provided that or under the condition that. So that is give a positive way forward for option one, yes, but conditions, perhaps we should fulfill the condition, or as Greg mentioned, there might be a way for some dialogue if possible at the later stage. However, due to the fact that we just compiled the reply to ICANN, we should provide that in all these four options. And that is up to ICANN how to conclude when they providing their final report to the NTIA. I hope that they will take it faithfully. I hope that they would not interpret it. But we should not interpret in any way no answer as agreement or no answer as opposition. No answer is no answer. In international law, an international tradition is called abstention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karus. And to add to your point, there's a couple of points. Number one, like Karus said, it would be certainly inappropriate to take an absence of answer as either support or objection. We need answers from chartering organizations, whatever the form. There might be some, I hope we don't have to go into interpretation of these answers. The clearer they are, the better. We'll need to assess the level of support and really go into, that's said in the charter about a consensus assessment of the chartering organizations. And that's been very clear in the NTIA criteria that there is a requirement that the proposal is a consensus proposal, and that really needs to be our key guideline in reading this. Secondly, regarding the dialogue, I think we need to be very aware of the fact that what we are asking chartering organizations to endorse are the recommendations, and that may leave some implementation details open for a dialogue, and so we'll need to make sure if the dialogue is on the detail, then that's perfectly fine, because that's going to be handled in the implementation phase, and we need to make sure that the endorsement or support we get is on the recommendations. So I think those are the items that we'll need to take into account when assessing the feedback we're getting. It's important, I believe, to communicate that to the chartering organizations so they have our criteria for reading through their feedbacks very clear upfront to avoid back and forth later on in the process. And I don't think it's time in any way to prepare for plan B or anything like this. What we'll have to do is assess that there is consensus, and I think that reinforces the relevance of communicate this very clearly to the chartering organization's leaders, with probably the adjustment suggested by Cavus for greater clarity. I don't know if my Adobe Connect is having some form of disturbance at this point, or if the queue is closed, but my impression is that the queue is Milton was asking. Yes, thank you, Keith, for reminding me. I said I had Milton on the queue and didn't turn to Milton, so please, Milton, take the floor.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, very well, Milton. Welcome.
Okay. Yes, thank you. So I'm wondering if we are still in a state of denial about the problem of having the charting organizations consider these decisions before the public comment period is over. I think if we're talking about consensus as being a requirement from the NTIA, that we have to see what the general public thinks about the proposal. We have to make sure that there's support for it, and then the charting organizations have to vote it up or down. And I think this solves the problem that Cavus was talking about, which is, you know, if you're just taking a survey now as a random member of the public, you're not going to be in a position to just say yes or no. You might think that you would support certain things under certain conditions, or you might have no opinion about them, but that's what the public comment period is for. And then the chartering organizations can take all that into account when they make their up or down decision. So what I'm doing here is I'm agreeing with the chairs that at some point we have to have a simple up or down, yes, no decision, which allows the group as a whole to assess the level of consensus on a finalized basis. But before you do that, you have a general public comment period, which some of us have been insisting upon all along, and people look at those comments and they say, you know, is this problem minor enough that I can overlook it and say yes, or is it serious enough that I would have to vote no in the final recommendation? Do you understand what I'm getting at? I just don't understand why some people have been insisting on collapsing those two processes into one. That's it for now. Thanks.
Thank you, Milton. I will turn to Thomas, but I think that the basic difference of view here is that since our recommendations are the fruit of lengthy debates and consensus that is already quite well documented, and as we discussed in Dublin, it is sensible to us, at least at this point, to ask the chartering organizations whether that compromise is consistent with, is ready for support or not, and that providing some input about the relevant comments, but however, I think these recommendations are now fleshed out so in a manner that enables that. But Thomas, you wanted to respond to that.
Yes, thank you very much, Mathieu, and thanks, Milton, for the question as well as to others that have raised concerns and asked questions surrounding this. My view is that the chartering organizations are asked to approve our report, basically. They are asked to approve the recommendations, the consensus recommendations from our group, and these stand for themselves. They are themselves based on public consultations that we have held earlier. So this all makes perfect sense if you look at it that way. So the chartering organizations take our report, they say yes or no to the recommendations as they stand. Our group is also tasked to look at the outcome of the public comment period, which we will do. And in case public comment suggests that we need to change our recommendation, our consensus on the previous on the recommendations in our third report needs to be revisited, i.e., we then need to issue a supplemental draft and bring that back to the chartering organizations for their approval. So the chartering organizations are not missing out on anything because they will say yes to recommendations that enjoy our group's consensus. These are the recommendations as they stand now in our third report, or in the unlikely case, or in the case that I'm sure we do not hope for, the recommendations that we will find in the supplemental draft should there be the need for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Next is Steve.
Hi, it's Steve Del Bianco. Milton and I had some exchange on the list about this, and Milton and others are certainly entitled to an opinion that another round of public comment should be inserted before the chartering orgs, and that's a legitimate opinion, but it is not. It is not what our charter requires. Our charter requires us to go to the chartering organizations who have been following this, as well as the two full rounds of public comments that we've done. So it's a matter of opinion, perhaps, on the part of Milton and others, that they wish to see us embark on a sequential process of public comment and then chartering work, but it is not an abrogation of the process for us to go directly to the chartering orgs. Milton, I refer you to the charter. It's pretty explicit about what our obligation is at this point. And I do feel like opening up the parallel process allows for the public who choose not to comment through a chartering org, allows that public to make their opinions known. And their opinions, of course, are visible to the chartering orgs, should they care, as well as the general public and the CCWG. But this is about the chartering organizations who set up the CCWG, and that's where our attention really needs to be. Thank you.
Well, I think you're overlooking the fact that this is a new proposal. Okay, when you keep talking about these previous two comment periods, you're forgetting the fact that we made huge deviations from what was in the second draft, and I think the public deserves to make their views of that known. And again, the sequential nature of it is simply common sense. You look at the general public comments first, and then you vote up or down on a chartering organization basis. But that's my view, and I'm disappointed to see that it's not being taken seriously by people, and that the real reason for it is not really being stated, which is that you just want to conform to an artificial deadline.
I think the point is well noted, and it's been made before, and it's taken quite seriously. One of the aspects that we stressed earlier, which I think is important to remind ourselves, is it's the chartering organizations themselves need to define their own process in the relevant timeline, and I guess that we've had a couple of two or three calls with the chartering organizations leaders at this point, which we reported on in this group, and I think that would be an appropriate channel, maybe in answer to the letter that we'll send. We'll get such requirement set up by a chartering organization, but I believe that there is a way forward that is appropriate, which has been accurately described by Cavus, which is pragmatic, which is common sense, and which takes into account the fact that this is a third draft, and which most of the community is now quite familiar with in the chartering organizations. And with that, I will now turn to Leon for AOBs and reminding him that Alan had a point that he wanted to raise. Leon?
Thank you very much, Mathieu. As you said, I remind also that Alan wanted to raise an AOB issue. So I would definitely turn to Alan. Alan, what is the issue that you wanted to raise on any other business?
Thank you very much, Leon. In support of the idea that chartering organizations should give a heads up as to problems they see early, the ALAC had a number of comments on various mission statements in to Proposal 2, some of which were addressed and some of which were not addressed. We really need to understand the rationale why the ones that were not addressed were not, either in the form of the detailed analysis of comments, if that's going to address it, or from Becky recounting what WP2 decided on these issues, because we're going to have to decide whether these indeed are still issues that we have to raise in the comments to the third proposal, or if we decide that the rationale is acceptable and we cede on them. So we really need something in writing pretty quickly to allow us to make our decisions as to what to include in our comments for WP3. Those things were addressed in our formal comment, and they were also, the ones that were not addressed were also forwarded to the WP2, and I think the accountability overall mailing list just a few days prior to the finalization of the proposal. So I do look forward to receiving something of that form. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. So this would require, of course, a note from the CCWG or the cultures for this.
No, it's Alan. I'm looking for something either from Becky as rapporteur or from staff,
okay,
because they've analyzed it and have it already but haven't published it yet, or something. As far as I know, the issues were not addressed in any public calls that I attended. They may have been addressed in a public call I didn't attend, or they were handled offline in some other way. But at this point, I have no record of getting a formal answer back as to why the issues that we raised were not addressed for those that weren't.
Excellent. Thanks for clarifying, Alan. So
thank
the
you.
Action item is on record on the notes, and we will, of course, follow up on that action item. And I see Becky is typing on the chat box, and I think that we can go back to these offline and then have a formal reply by Becky. So the next any other business issue is travel funding for the Marrakesh meeting. We have been receiving some questions on whether there would be available funding for members of the CCWG attending the Marrakesh meeting. And as you know, we have held some face-to-face meeting adjacent to ICANN meetings in the past. And as far as I understand, ICANN travel policy is not to fund any people to attend ICANN meetings, but of course they have made the exception when we have arranged to have adjacent face-to-face meetings to ICANN meetings to not only fund people to attend our face-to-face meeting, but also to extend that funding so that people that are attending the face-to-face meeting are allowed to stay for the whole ICANN meeting as well. So since we have no confirmed plans for the CCWG to have a face-to-face meeting adjacent to the meeting in Marrakesh, I think that there would be so far no opportunity to fund anyone to attend the Marrakesh meeting as a regular attendant to the meeting. But if we do plan to have a face-to-face meeting, then that could change, of course. if we have a face-to-face meeting in Marrakesh, then we would be requesting travel support for the members of the CCWG, as it has happened in the past. And I see Alan Greenberg's hand is up. Alan?
Thank you very much. Travel requests are going in soon, and certainly meeting requests, you know, for individual meetings going in soon. If the CCWG is going to hold anything other than a trivial meeting, we really need a heads up soon, because it may affect travel, and it certainly will affect conflicts with other sessions. You know, given that we're at best or at worst, we're going to be embarking on Workstream 2, I can't see that we don't need a meeting, but that's not my call.
Thanks, Alan. I didn't get the message quite well. We are not planning an adjacent face-to-face meeting, but we are actually holding three 90-minute slots so far as I can tell, for meetings of the CCWG. So instead of having an adjacent meeting, we would be holding these CCWG meetings throughout the regular ICANN meeting schedule. So at this point, we would be taking care of course, of the Workstream 2 issues on these proposed meetings. But we need to, of course, iron out the details on how travel funding, if any, would be available for members to attend this meeting.
Leon, I have one question, if you allow me.
Yes, please go ahead, Cavus.
Yes, is there any meeting envisaged between 22nd of January and Marrakesh meeting of ICANN?
Thanks, Cavus. This is up to the chartering organizations to determine whether they will be needing to meet face-to-face in order to make their final assessment and hopefully approval of our recommendations. So this is not clear yet for us on whether there will be chartering organizations needing to actually meet face-to-face. There is a chance, I think, and that's what I suppose. It's just me speaking for myself and with no actual basis to state this, but it is my feeling that maybe the GAC would be meeting face to face, but there are no other signals so far that I know of on that there would be, as we had discussed before, an intersessional meeting. So at this point, it is not clear whether there would be a face-to-face meeting for charter organizations in between now and the 21st of January.
No, I'm not referring to that. I'm referring to the CCWG meeting, but not charter organizations. I know GAC will be discussing something in January and so on. So I'm talking of the CCWG, any physical meeting between 22nd of January and the Marrakesh meeting of ICANN. Thank you.
So if I heard well, your question is whether there would be a face-to-face meeting of the CCWG in between those dates?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, no, there is no face-to-face meeting planned in between those dates.
Okay, thank you.
So I see some comments on the chat box on whether it's up to us to make the decision, if it's ICANN staff, if it's the CCWG members. We have to abide to ICANN's travel policy, and of course we would be requesting that if we are to hold a face-to-face meeting in the Marrakesh meeting, then the members of the CCWG should, as have been before, funded to attend this meeting. But so far, as I said, we haven't had a clear signal on this, and we will, of course, update you as information comes in on this issue. And I don't know if there are any other questions or comments on this issue or whether there are any other business. I see a question from Robin. When will the decision be made if we will want a face-to-face meeting? I'm not sure if I'm understanding well that question, Robin. If it's a question on a face-to-face meeting in between now and January the 21st, or is it a face-to-face meeting in Marrakech? Okay, in Marrakech. Perfect. So I think that this would be a subject to be discussed not only in the list but in our next calls. So I think we would definitely need to decide on these pretty soon so that everyone can begin travel arrangements accordingly. So are there any other questions on this or any other business that anyone wants to raise? Okay, so having no other questions or business that have that want to be raised, and yes, it's noted, Robin, that we need to decide soon. We are mindful that a decision needs to be made very soon. And with no further comments and no further questions being raised, I think that we have covered the agenda items for today's call, and we would like to thank you all for your attendance, and this call is now adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.